All right, you're back in the DFSR here with a PGA podcast. It's Wednesday, August 8th. I'm here with Chris Durrell, our main PGA guy. This guy wears so many hats for us. I hate to even just say PGA. He covers MLB for us, PGA, NASCAR, hockey. He does all the sports. I like to joke, he does all the sports that I don't really pay attention to, except for golf this year, buddy. I'm into golf now. Chris, how's it going, man?
Yeah, it's going good. I haven't touched tennis yet. I haven't got there yet, but cover everything else.
yeah. When you're living up there in Canada, like it makes sense to like sort of just go a little off brand too. It's like I'm just going to be the guy. This is why we love having you around. It's like I'm going to be the guy that just does all the sports. You happen to like them too, but I'm going to do all the sports that these other guys don't like, and I'll just kind of crush it. So we're here to talk PGA Championship, last major of the season. Majors are always exciting. On DraftKings and FanDuel, they run big contests. You know, the DraftKings does the Millionaire Maker for PGA for their for all the majors. They do a little softer pricing for the majors because they're drawing in maybe some people. I'll put myself in this class, like dabbling in PGA without having a full range of expertise about all the different stats, but also at the same time trying to build out a model that we think can be sustainable on a week-to-week basis. But Chris kind of works in the trenches here and makes sure that, like, you know, we're fully covered on what are all the things that the course is going to bring up. You know, when you look at these majors, do you get overly excited for majors? Do you see them as just like kind of another week in the world of covering golf? You know, you cover golf week to week. Do the majors bring more excitement for you, or does like the pricing softness kind of make it more crapshooty? Like, what's your overall feeling about majors? And then we can get into the specifics on this course.
Yeah, I do get excited for the majors, especially from just a viewership standpoint. But sure. From a DFS standpoint, a lot of people are looking at the Millie Maker and all the big contests, like even like the $4 and the $5 huge prize pools this week. I like getting into the cash games a little bit more at the majors as well, just because you're drawing in a whole new crowd of people that don't play every single week like most of us do. I think it's a really good opportunity to get in and splash around in even more cash games at the majors.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, it's rare to have this in other sports, right? We don't have a baseball. I mean, maybe you have some bigger slates, and that makes a little more sense. You know, have a big Friday slate as opposed to things like a Thursday that's broken up into evening and morning, or excuse me, evening and afternoon stuff. But you rarely see in other sports like the drawing in a bunch of crowds just from four times total a year, right? Because like when we get to the playoffs and the Super Bowl or stuff like that. That doesn't necessarily draw more people because the player pool for those sports is dramatically decreased. Golf doesn't work that way. So I think from a golf perspective, it definitely seems, and maybe NASCAR gets this with the big races, but it definitely is interesting to have a sport that, like, you know, hovers around the fringes, and that was a golf term I just used, so pun intended, it hovers around the fringes of the sports world, and then, you know, for these four times a year, it's kind of appointment television. All right, let's get into the PGA Championship. Break down the course. I think this is a new-ish course for this tournament, which is sometimes problematic, I think. And you can talk about that, about how when we don't have a lot of course history, how it is we would go about attacking, you know, making laps and what's that. So break down the course a little bit, and then we can talk what stats are going to make sense here, and also like what golfers probably stand out from different models based on what we're sort of looking at course-wise.
Sure. Yeah, this week they're at the PGA Championship rotates courses every year. So this year it's at Belrive Country Club in St. Louis. It's a par 70. Now for the members of this course, it usually plays as a par 72, but they've broken down two of the par 5s into par 4s, so they're really long. Par 4 fourth hole is 521 yards, and the 10th hole is 508 yards. So those are pretty much monster par 4s. But yeah, the last time this course was used, it was a 2008 BMW Championship, part of the PGA Tour playoffs. And then it was a Reese Jones redesign. I believe it was in 2005. He did a year-long redesign. So just kind of brought in some of his aspects. I think it was his father. He was the one that originally designed it back in the day. And he actually also, Reese Jones, designed the Baltistrol course. And it was used for the PGA Championship 2 years ago. So while we don't have course history, and I'm not weighing it at all on my cheat sheet this week, I'm definitely looking at that 2016 leaderboard and some of the results from 2016, because it's a par 70 course, like almost the exact same distance, and he uses, you know, the same concepts on most of his courses, and you can say that with a lot of the designers out there, architects of the golf courses. So definitely looking at that, as well as the 2008 leaderboard, even though, you know, there's not a whole bunch of players from that tournament. Geez, what's that now? 10 years ago, that are playing this week. So, it definitely brings up you know, a little bit, but it also helps you look at more of the form, which I think is a little more important coming into the majors. You want players that are playing good, coming in with, you know, consecutive top tens, hitting low rounds. Those are the guys that are probably going to do best versus, you know, course history is a very small sample size. It only, you know, 4 rounds from a year ago and 4 rounds from 2 years ago. A player could have changed a whole bunch in his game. So it, I think in a way it kind of, it helps with a model finding more consistency for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, whenever we can draw on comps, really in any sport, we in any data set, we want to be able to do that. It gets a little harder when, you know, 10 years, like you said, 10 years between tournaments is just simply too far to make any reasonable judgments. A lot of these golfers weren't even playing 10 years ago. So it's going to be very tough. I mean, maybe you can look at, like, what type of golfer was scoring well at these courses. And then we talked before, you know, we talked about Pete Dye courses earlier in the year. You know, if we can find a course designer that has enough of a sample sitting around, yep. just like in that's being played in the PGA, sometimes I think you can make determinations. Gets a little tricky, I think, to be able to do that because, again, this is the other problem too. Conditions at courses change year to year. Just weather, it's like hard to factor all these things in. So knowing that it's going to maybe be hard to find some of these comps, what kind of stats are you looking for to begin targeting golfers? I want to talk about a process I've been going through too, and we can talk about if we think this is correct or not. But first, before we do that, let's talk about what golfers you're looking at this week, or specifically what stats you're kind of honing in on as the ones that seem to be the most important when I'm trying to just put together some lineups.
For sure. So we got some narrower fairways, tree-lined. There's a lot of bunkers out there in specific landing zones. I don't think this course, and he kind of sets it up to be not, you know, a favorable to a bomber, favorable to a shorter hitter. You really need to find fairways out here and not just find, it was kind of like last week, you don't just need to find the fairway. You need to find the right spot of the fairway to give yourself a chance at hitting the greens. And then there's definitely some areas, and I posted a nice flyover video of the entire course in my article. Definitely go check that out if you haven't yet. What you see is, you know, for bombers, he challenges them. There's a lot of bunkers, so it's like risk-reward. If you want to bomb at 300, 300-plus, you definitely can, but there's definitely going to be a little more risk than just, you know, pulling out your 3-wood, hitting it 290, 280, and then having, you know, place a little easier to place it with those clubs. So I think it caters to both bombers and shorter hitters this week, and he kind of challenges the whole realm of a player's golf game. Going into the greens, they're very large greens, but they're multi-tiered, so hitting the green isn't just number one. So looking at strokes gained approach this week, I always look at strokes gained approach as like my top stat, because you need to hit those greens to give yourself a chance at a birdie no matter whether you're in the rough or the fairway. But this week, when looking at strokes gained approach, I'm going to be looking at proximity. You need to be close to the hole to give yourself a chance at birdie. And not only that, even if you hit the green in some spots in these greens this week, there's a very good chance that guys are going to be three putting out there just because, you know, the multi levels and stuff like that. So I guess I'm looking at strokes gained off the tee. I'm kind of leaning a little more towards the accuracy side of things. Strokes gained approach, a little more to the proximity side of things. Definitely three putt avoidance is going to be one, and birdie or better percentage really correlates with DraftKings FanDuel scoring. And some of the reports from the players this week so far is that it's playing, you know, the greens are playing soft and slow, and a lot of players are saying it could turn into a birdie fest. So instead of seeing like a minus 10, minus 12 kind of score, we might be into that minus 15 to minus 18 range this week, if that holds true what they're saying throughout their practice round. So definitely that birdie or better percentage comes in huge this week.
That's really interesting. So, you know, if I'm gonna try to summarize this, and tell me if I'm wrong, and then we'll get into some of these golfers, but the specific guys. Is it fair to say, based on sort of what you know about the course, based on that we don't have a ton of information, you know, of having had played it, and just like kind of what we know going in, is it safe to say that just being a well-rounded, look, this is, I'm taking a really bird's eye view here. This is probably an oversimplification of what the actual issue is, but is it fair to say that if we look at golfers just on in the aggregate for their entire game for like the whole year, does this course play where maybe I don't need to hone in as many stats? Maybe I can actually just hone in on how well-rounded this guy is and how consistent this guy is on a week-to-week basis to inform my decision, independent of knowing anything else or the fact that it kind of plays, like you said, it doesn't play like it's going to help the bombers and doesn't feel like it's going to really hurt the guys that are shorter either. Like, can we just take a well-rounded approach to it and just say, look, this is the guys that have been the most consistent over the course of the year. These are the guys that just have been the best over the course of the year. Where they stand in terms of price, and that's is that too simple, or is it like, or is this like just the kind of week to take that approach?
from a cash game standpoint, I think you're spot on. So, I mean, looking at the stats, when they break it down to these strokes gained that came into play, there's strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach, strokes gained around the green, which is like you're scrambling, and then you got strokes gained putting. You put those all together, we got strokes gained tee to green. Myself, I like strokes gained ball striking, which is your off the tee plus approach, and then you got that around the green. So really, I'm looking at strokes gained tee to green exactly to look at a complete player's game consistency. And then, you know, for GPPs looking for that upside, that's where I start factoring in that birdie or better percentage. And I want the players who are going to be scoring more birdies, not the guys that are going to be going par, 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 especially this week. If we're going to have a winning score of minus 15 to minus 18, going to need a lot of birdies, to not only guys that finish high, but we're going to need guys that make a lot of birdies this week to get our fantasy scores up there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk about some of these golfers. I'm going to have some guys I want to throw at you talking about upside, running some standard deviation, stuff like that. But let's go through some of the golfers that you're kind of honing in on the start, guys that you see as being good fits, especially if we'll focus a little bit more on DraftKings pricing here since they have the Millie Maker going. But where are you starting with making lineups this week? Who are the guys that stand out to you? Let's roll through some of those dudes.
In a field like this, definitely looking at Dustin Johnson, especially on DraftKings, where when the pricing is this soft, it makes it very easy to construct a lineup with the number one player in the world, and he's the number one player in the world for a reason. He has a ton of upside. He leads the field in DraftKings scoring over his last five events, DraftKings scoring for the season. He's number one in strokes gained off the tee, number one in ball striking, number two overall in proximity, number one in par four scoring. There's 12 of them this week on a par 70 course, and he's number one in birdie or better percentage. So he's just number one across the board for me this week. Going down a little bit.
Well, hold on real quick. Before you go off DJ, I'm gonna throw out some stats here on him real quick, just in terms of how he lines up on a week-to-week basis from a ranking standpoint. So and tell me if this line of logic follows, because I'm going to use this line of logic for a couple of the other guys you're going to mention. But if I look at just on average, not counting wins, just on a round-to-round basis, DJ is the best golfer week-to-week. Round-to-round relative to the field. He's about something like 3%. I'm rounding up, but it's something 3% better than the average golfer, which, by the way, that doesn't sound like a lot. That's a ton. The golfers are very, very tightly grouped, which is why you see not the same guys winning every week, right? Which is why you see the best golfers missing cuts at times. It's just because there are these golfers, you are better, but you are not better on the order of like LeBron James to like the sixth man or the 11th man from the Grizzlies or whatever, right? Yep. Like that kind of spread in basketball is stark, and you can see it, and there's no one would ever debate it. Golfers do not exist, at least from the number standpoint, golfers do not exist like this. Like, they're much more tightly grouped, which is like, this is, and again, that's why I'm just going to reiterate, which is why even the best golfers in the world miss cuts from time to time. It's why Dustin Johnson doesn't win every week, right? So, like, he is somewhere around 3% better than the average golfer. That, again, that's a ton. Where it's also really interesting with him is he has, among the top group, he's not only the best, but he has the higher standard deviation from round to round, meaning when it's not going great, it goes kind of really bad for him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he will shoot some really high scores. But when it's going great for him, no one can touch him. Like, is that a good summary of his game? Because that's what the number, if I'm just looking at random numbers, and that's kind of where I'm existing in the golf world right now, I'm looking at strictly numbers that I've calculated through just, uploading every single round of golf that's been played over the last few years. Does that line up with, like, the sort of the thought process around rostering a guy like DJ? Is that, like, when he's great, no one's going to come close to him, but when he's off, like, he will just be off from time to time, but the upside is what really gives him, like, the ability to win every week. Is that too, like, broad, or does that kind of make sense? Because I'm gonna use this line of logic for a couple guys we're going to talk about in a second.
No, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, looking at his rounds this year, he's got some 77s, some 76s in there. But then again, like you said, when he's on, he's on. He's shooting 64, 63, 66s and just blowing the field away. So that definitely makes sense with that standard deviation, with him having a ton of upside, that when he's on, he's going to blow the field away. So no, that makes complete sense.
All right, hit us up with a couple more of these guys in the top tier, and we'll kind of roll through some of the thought process. I have some numbers on more of these guys. Who else in that upper tier are you kind of taking a closer look at?
It'll be hard to get away from Justin Thomas under 10K this week. He's coming off a win last week. He's the defending champion of the PGA last year. He stands out in almost all those same stats. He's second in strokes gained tee to green, fourth in ball striking. he's up there in par four scoring as well, third, and he's third in birdie or better percentage. So hard to get away from him this week as well. The guy that I'm probably going to have the most exposure to just because of price and everything combined is Brooks Koepka. He's been amazing lately. The only thing that's really let him down has been his putting. And putting is probably the most variable part of a player's game. So if he can get back to even average putting, because he has lost... Yeah, he lost two strokes putting last week, still finished fifth, and he missed the cut at the Canadian Open. He lost almost six strokes putting. So if he can get his putter on, he's kind of like DJ in that high variance kind of thing where his upside is huge, but that standard deviation is pretty big. So I'm definitely looking at him. He's going to be high-owned.
Yeah, his standard deviation, we talked briefly about this off the air, but I'm just going to I'll quote the number here. His standard deviation is like so much higher than anybody else in this tier that it's like kind of alarming almost that like you mentioned he had some injury issues early in the year, which is probably going to contribute to it. He has not played as many rounds as some of these other guys. Most of these other guys have played butting up or over 60 rounds this year. He's only played 46. That's significantly less than some of these other guys. But he has a 0.05 for this number, 0.05 standard deviation off of like his average performance. The next highest guy in the top tier is 0.44. So you're looking at like 12% difference from one guy to the other, and that is pretty significant. So if we're adding in standard deviation, like I like to take off standard deviation when looking for floor, because like this is not, I'd be hard pressed to roster him in cash simply because the bad rounds have been so bad. But if you're looking for upside, like that upside for his price is like almost vaults him like pretty close to Dustin Johnson simply because his best rounds are going to be right in line with DJ. One guy I actually have a question about. I know you wrote him up, but this guy we kind of talked about off the air. You wrote up Justin Rose. Make the case for and against Justin Rose. I mean, how worried are we about the injury? I know he withdrew last week or 2 weeks ago from the Hearthstone. He withdrew. How worried are we about the injury here? Because I want to talk about where the system sees Justin Rose. From a number standpoint, it's like you'd be absolutely nuts to get away from him. But like, how much does the back issue maybe play into the thought process here?
I'm not too worried about it. Everything I'm reading out there is that he's fine. And without seeing any conclusive data that he isn't, that he is still injured, he's probably still going to feel he's dealt with some back injuries last year as well, but he's been just tremendous, lately. Like, I think he's got four straight top tens, including a win and a runner up finish in his last tournament. So he's definitely there, and looking at, I think a lot of people are going to be scared. I'm seeing a lot of ownership projections. He's going to be like half as much owned as DJ. The guys I talked about, Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka. So that's good because you can take that risk and you don't really have to be, you don't have to roster him a whole bunch. If you're building 10 lineups and you put him in two, you're already overweight. If he's going to be 10% owned, 10 to 12% owned, you have him in two of 10, you're right there, or four of 20 kind of thing. You don't got to take a huge risk to have some exposure to him. And we talked off the air just about his standard deviation, and he's just been incredibly consistent.
Oh, he's by the way, he's been consistent, and he's like in the range of DJ from just like an overall golfer standpoint, like from a round to round standpoint. Forget the standard deviation piece, and I'm gonna maybe I can start taking shots on it every time I mention standard deviation as like a sort of a drinking game here. But like he is right there with DJ over this season. So his last 52 rounds, DJ's played 58. He's 0.41 of a point behind him in terms of just like average golf multiplier. And then his consistency from a round to round basis is easily the best in this group. Actually, interesting enough, Tiger's actually been pretty consistent as well. But Justin Rose, that's where it really helps him. And so in our model, it's basically saying you'd be nuts to get away from Justin Rose at this price at 9,400 on DraftKings. Do you think? Because he's like the lineups that are spitting out with him, it's basically, this is the lineup right now: Justin Rose, Justin Thomas, Paul Casey, Finau, Howell, and then Ryan Moore. We'll talk about him. Moore can kind of come or go. I'm not married to that piece of it. But from the Rose standpoint, from the numbers, these numbers say you'd be legit insane to not play Justin Rose at 9,400 in this tournament. Does that make sense to you, or is it like, or could the numbers have gotten a little wonky here just because he's good, but like maybe he isn't that good?
Yeah, not at all. I think just at that number, I think even a 90% healthy Justin Rose makes a lot of sense.
All right, let's talk about ownership. Let's go the next tier down. I know we I mean, I don't know. Where do you think Tony? You did write up Tony Finau. Where do you think his ownership comes in this week? Is he a guy that you're seeing is going to be a popular play? Your model kind of supports it. Our model kind of supports it. Is the talk of the industry that he's going to be pretty highly owned? He's coming very cheap on DraftKings at 8,100 for a guy who seems like he's been kind of playing lights out lately.
At that price, I think he's top three ownership this week, with the chance that he's probably the top owned guy, actually. And I don't think you get away from him just because he's going to be 25% owned or 28% owned or whatever, because he's finished top 10 in all three of the majors so far this year. So he's proven that he can play with the big boys in these big tournaments. So he makes a ton of birdies. He's been great off the tee. He's just been great everywhere. So definitely not worried about I'm going to have, you know, I'm definitely going to be overweight on him, just, you know, probably have about 30% somewhere in there, 30 to 35% of him in my lineups. I'm doing about 25, 30 lineups, I think, this week is what I've kind of settled on. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. And how does he fit in the model there?
Very well. I mean, just about perfect. He's incredibly, he's good. And for this price tier, he's the best guy in that tier. And that, like, yeah, I'm gonna range it from 8,600 down to 7,600. That's probably too wide of a spread. But, like, he, in that $1,000, 500 more and 500 less, he is, like, easily the best golfer on a week-to-week basis. Mm-hmm. And basically has the lowest standard deviation among that group. Paul Casey's kind of close, but Finau's still better. So it's close between those two guys. For cash game purposes, I think just knowing that Finau will probably be higher owned, I think I just assume roster him at basically the same price as Casey. So I think that's like a fine way to go. But yeah, for this model, it's all supported. Who else are you kind of targeting in this? I would call this the middle tier.
Patrick Cantlay really stands out for me as well. He's number seven in my overall model at 8,400. Seems like a really good price for how well he's playing. He finished 33rd at the PGA Championship last week, and he's just been coming in with some solid performances. Since missing the cut at the Fort Worth Invitational in May, he's gone fourth at the Memorial, a little bit down at the U.S. Open 45th, but I mean, that was a little bit different of a tournament, very tough. 15th at the Travelers, 12th at the Open at Carnoustie, and then he's coming off a T6 last week at the WGC Bridgestone, and he's just gaining a ton of strokes off the tee, which I like to see. Tee to green, he's kind of, there's a lot of variance in his approach game, it looks like, but when he's on, he's gaining 5+ strokes to the field in the approach shot. So definitely he stands out, and he's going to be probably, I'm thinking, like 15 to 18% owned this week. So a little bit less than Finau. So if you're worried about Finau, you're looking to make a little bit of a pivot, Cantlay definitely makes sense as well.
Yeah, cool. Hit us up. We're going to get out of here pretty soon here, but I want to get through the this rest of this middle tier. I agree, or the system, our numbers agree on Cantlay. Just a little bit behind Finau. A little bit more consistent, but a little worse on average round to round. He's missed two cuts out of 60 rounds so far this season. So again, these percentage points are so damn close when it really gets fired into it, because the difference, like, honestly, the bigger thing is that he's 300 more, which ends up making something of a challenge. Let me throw out a guy in this middle tier too. Webb Simpson is a guy that at 7,700 on DraftKings, this new model really is drawing in terms of, just, you know, looks like he's a pretty consistent guy. Is there a case here for Webb Simpson? Is this a guy that was on your radar, or like, or not so much before I mentioned them? I mean, you know who Webb Simpson is. That's not my question. I know you know who Webb Simpson is. I'm wondering if this was a guy that you would have thought about, or you just saw other, maybe better value in his range.
I would be more inclined to use him in cash games. He's been really good putting this year. Hasn't been very good, you know, for his career. So I think there's maybe some regression going to set in with his putting. He is ranked out of my sheet out of 156 golfers. And keep in mind, like 20, I think around 20 of those golfers are like PGA professionals, like teachers around America. They get invited to this tournament, the top ones in the country. So take 20 away from there, you're looking at about 136 golfers in the field. Some of them are past PGA champions. So, you know, you narrow that down even further, like 130 golfers. He's ranked 72nd in birdie or better percentage. So I just don't think the complete upside is there. Just looking at my model, but he's really good in par fours. He's top 20 in strokes gained approach on the sheet. So from a cash game standpoint, I'm more inclined to use him there than in GPPs myself.
Makes total sense. Give us a couple more guys before we get out of here.
Sure. One guy I'm looking at, I've kind of been riding him pretty high this year since he turned pro, is Joaquin Niemann. He didn't have enough stats to get qualified on the PGA Tour. He doesn't have enough rounds in, but I entered them in anyway, just to see where he would rank, and he's like at the tops of everything. He pushed him all the way to number 4 in my overall model. He's just been flying since coming in. He missed a couple cuts early. He's made four of his last five, and it seems like when he's competing, he is up at the top of the field. Like, he missed a cut at the St. Jude. He's gone 17th, 5th, 23rd, 37th. So for that low price, before that missed cut, he had an 8th and a 6th. So he's gaining strokes, like, in every strokes gain category. He kind of looked like he struggled around the green, but he seemed to have picked up on that. And again, the putting is a lot of variance there, but he's young, on brand new tour. So what he's doing out there right now really stands out. So, and I don't think he's going to be too highly owned, like maybe in that 10% range. So you don't need a whole bunch to get a bunch of exposure, because there's a lot of guys in this mid 7K range, especially on DraftKings, where there's softer pricing. So he makes a lot of sense, because the guy who's going to take a lot of ownership away from him is going to be Zach Johnson for sure. He's 11th in my model. He has been incredibly consistent all year.
Yep.
It'll be hard to get away from him. I know we talked about off air between Ryan Moore, Zach Johnson being very, very close when it comes to that standard deviation. Like, I think you said, like, less than 1% or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I like both of those guys from a safety standpoint at 7,500, 7,400.
Yeah, the only thing that's dinging Neiman in this model is he just hasn't played enough rounds. I tried. It's weird to have to do this, because you just need, the bigger the sample size, the more you can trust it, right? And so there has to be a way to sort of ding a player for, and this is why this new system is going to always be slow on the catch up with a new guy, especially if they're good. There's ways around it. You could eliminate it, but then what the problem there is, you just draw in some guys that you probably don't want to bring in, which I found to be the sort of the problem. So Neiman's only issue is that among this tier, he just has played 36 rounds, and the other guys have played 66, and that's just not, it's just not enough of a, from my standpoint, it's not enough of a sample, even though, I get that that's probably too rigid of a way to look at things, because you are going to, in this system at least, you're going to be late to the party more than you're ever early. And sometimes you have to make concessions around certain guys. But Zach Johnson is definitely a guy who the model loves here. He's among his tier, is the most, he's the best. So I'm going like the 8,000 down to 8,000 to 7,500 range here for Zach Johnson. He is the best guy week to week, except Webson's actually a little bit better than him. But that, basically, they're essentially tied. And Zach Johnson has just a slightly higher standard deviation among guys that have played similar rounds. So it's very, very close between those two guys. Just a few percentage points off. Like, their difference in overall projection is very thin. And like you said, if he's just going to be higher owned, it would make sense probably to pivot away from Simpson into Zach Johnson, just because, I don't know, it from an ownership perspective on cash, at least, that seems to make sense. Anyone else before we get out of here that you're kind of taking a look at? I see Gary Woodland on here in the sheet, and I have one question about Ryan Moore too, but who else are you looking at?
Yeah, Woodland, he's going to have a lot of variance there. He's kind of been up and down, but he's really trending in the right direction. He's got back-to-back top 25 finishes, and I mean, at 7K on DraftKings, makes it easy to pair him with like a Zach Johnson, because Woodland's going to be a little bit lower owned. It's going to get you up to like a Justin Thomas and like a Molinari and a Fleetwood. Those guys in the 9K range, pairing them together. So definitely him. Alex Noren I mentioned as well. Something I've been looking at, 12 of the non par three holes, so take away those four par threes, 12 of the 14 holes are a dog leg to the left. So a lot of people are talking about the right to left ball flight, so looking for right-handed golfers that hit a draw and left-handed golfers that hit a fade, and Noren definitely fits that model for me. Zach Johnson does as well. Patrick Reed I think is going to be a little bit lower owned. We know he's crushed at these majors this year, so I'm definitely looking at him. Got an outright bet on him for sure. Same with Alex Noren. Little bit Phil and Bubba, they're the lefties that, you know, hit the fade, and then Patrick Cantley's another guy that fits in there that hits the right to left ball flight as well. So those are just some of the guys I'm looking at. And then as I go through this a little bit more, you can download my cheat sheet from the article, and I'm going to have a bunch more targets. I have added a separate tab with targets and labeling them as either GPP pivots or safe in all formats kind of thing, and I'm going to be adding a few more of those on there today for anyone that we maybe didn't discuss.
Awesome, man. Great stuff. We'll save the Ryan Moore thing. We can answer that. I'm going to save that one for now. Just we'll get out of here. But great luck on PGA. Great work you're doing here for us. I love talking. It's getting me excited to talk off on a week-to-week basis. I like having some numbers to look at and be able to shoot them off you and say, does this make sense? And you're great about saying, no, it doesn't, or kind of, yes, it does. And I think it's been really helpful in me starting to understand the PGA process, which I think I'm like 20% of the way there. There's another 80% that I need to get there on. But I think we're slow and steady wins the race. You can go check out out Chris's work over at DFSR.com. He's got his article up, the aforementioned cheat sheet. If you sign up for a free 3-day trial, you can jump into the chat. He's always there answering questions, links to all of his stuff. Give us your Twitter handle real quick, and then anything else you're going to be taking a look at before we get into the PGA Championship this week.
Yeah, for sure. So you can hit me up on Twitter with any questions. It's at Jaeger_bombs9. And yeah, I'll be in the DFSR chat room pretty much from now. I'm in baseball. I'll be there for baseball tonight. And then after baseball lock, I'll be there for 3 or 4 hours talking PGA if you have any questions there as well.
Beautiful, man. DFSR.com/MLB will get you that free 3-day trial that we mentioned that is going to give you members only chat, MLB projections with optimal lineups. And also I'll post our PGA lineups that I'm going to be trying out there in FanDuel and DraftKings this week. So go check that out. DFSR.com, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after. Chris, good luck in PGA this week. Talk to you again soon.
Cheers, buddy.